Alan Kring Productions presents the Illinois State Collegiate Compendium, Academic Lectures in Business and Economics. This is Business Finance, FIL 240, Section 1 for Autumn Semester 2016. Lecture 13, delivered on October 4, 2016. The title of this lecture is Bonds.
Today, bonds. And this is a fairly compact lecture. It's straightforward calculator-wise, not hard at all. But there is some background that is important to carry on about different kinds of bonds. Now, I've actually gone through most of this with you already. This brings it all together into a specific single subject lecture. Bonds represent debt. Specifically, when I say bonds, actually, we use the word bonds, and sometimes what we really mean is something that's a shorter-term debt instrument, like a bill or a note, but we use the term bonds kind of generically, perhaps to the confusion of some people. As I said, when a consumer takes on debt, the consumer's payments amortize the principal along with paying the interest. In other words, the payments service the debt and amortize the loan. With corporate and government debt, that's not how it works. The debt is serviced through its life. In other words, the interest is paid on the principal, the face value, and then at the end, that one last interest payment is made and the face value is paid off too. When a debt issue is created for a fancy big corporation, you would be the head of the underwriting syndicate. In other words, the investment bankers, and this is for stocks or bonds, you have made the agreement with me, the borrower or the issuer of stock, it doesn't matter. Okay, you're going to buy my issue. I don't have that problem. You're going to take care of it. So it's over for me as soon as everything is in place. But you have the job of selling it out. You're going to set up a syndicate of other brokerage houses. You. And create so that each one in the syndicate gets a part of the issue and then sells it. You're the lead underwriter in it, but there are other syndicate members. Sometimes you'll look at these tombstones, which is the announcement of the offering, and you'll see like 20 different investment bankers. I shouldn't have said brokerage house. Investment banking houses that can be involved in it. And there's one at the top that's the big name that's the lead on it. So for a debt issue, you have made the negotiations. You're not going to step out there and just sell this blindly. You know who's going to buy it. All of you in this syndicate have already made sure that you know the buyers of this. In other words, the actual lenders who are going to be lending the money to me. But what you do is on their behalf, you're going to make sure that everything is right about this bond issue. And I, as a company, my lawyers are going to fuss. Okay, well, that's kind of harsh on us, but this is... And we come to an agreement. That agreement is the bond indenture. It's a contract. It has many, many covenants. They protect the lenders so that you can go out there and you, as a buyer of some of these bonds, You work with someone at one of the investment houses in the syndicate. You're a typical investor, very wealthy, very powerful, possibly a trust fund, something like that. You are going to make, he is not going to do anything that is going to hurt you, okay? So he's going to make sure that all of you in this syndicate are going to make sure that this bond indenture agreement is locked tight. The lenders are not going to be screwed, if possible, in any way, shape, or form. And I, as the borrower, the company who is issuing the debt, I'm going to live under your thumb for the period. Let's say it's a 20-year bond issue for $1 billion. 20-year bond issue for $1 billion. My company's trading symbol is ABC. Yes, those are my actual initials. And it's ABC 5.8% 2000. We'll make this a new issue, 36. That means that the trading symbol of my company is ABC. I am borrowing a ton of money, and I'm going to pay the lenders 5.8% of the face value of $1,000 per unit for 20 years. So it's a new issue. So here, the maturity is in 20 years, and the term is 20 years. The term is how long a bond has left. This is a primary market transaction here. Now, later, if you decide you don't want this bond anymore, you can sell it through your broker, and that would be a secondary market transaction. It has nothing to do with me as the original issuer of the bond. This is just playing the market. But in the beginning, the primary issue is this animal right here that happens today. Oh, Mother's Market. Now, remember, face value, unless I ever say differently, is 1,000. Coupon is a percent of the face value. So this is a $58 per year coupon. Typically, the coupon is paid in 2 installments per year. So in other words, it's $58 a year paid twice annually at $28 every 6 months. We'll have to remember that when we price bonds, that they actually are semi-annual. Some are quarterly. I've even seen some that are now monthly. I didn't even think that bonds were, they did that with bonds, but some bonds are now paid, you get your interest check monthly. But anyway, it's all dry. Let me point out a couple of things. That indenture agreement, that bond contract that you have worked out on behalf of the syndicate for the lenders that I, as the borrower, must sign. It's going to have a lot of stuff in it. There are going to be things like a trustee that's going to watch me on behalf of the lenders to make sure that I, the company, don't do stupid things that could wreck the company and make it so that I couldn't pay my bills. That's going to put handcuffs on me. I might want to take on some interesting, risky projects, but you, as a lender, you don't want me taking those kinds of risks because that might put cash flow in danger that I have to pay you with, okay? If I have some great idea, well, that trustee might have a word with it. Dividend payments might not be as generous. They might have something to say in that contract about dividend payments, because remember, that money should be flowing back into the company to fuel the operations and have money to pay the bonds. There will be a sinking fund, some way in which money will be put aside so that when the maturity date hits, the money is there to pay it. All kinds of covenants. I've actually seen it. I was curious. I didn't really work in the world of bonds. I was stocks, but I was just curious. I kept asking, can I see a bond covenant, a bond indenture agreement? And it was sort of like, where are they? They're kind of like mythical. And then finally, one day, some guy I know, he was in a brokerage house in New York City. He said, he kept asking for one of these. And he said, I finally found one. He showed me one. It was like a book. It was like a freaking book. It was all the things that were in there, the requirements, and anyway, okay. There are rating services for bonds. They rate the quality of bonds. The three big ones are Standard & Poor's, Moody's, and Fitch. Now, the rating letters are a little different, but it's usually something like AAA is going to be a very high quality bond, an investment grade bond. BBB, it's still pretty good, but it might not be quite as safe, so there's going to be a higher coupon to compensate for a little more risk. Usually in these rating services, when you see a C or a D, that is considered a non-investment grade bond. That's a diplomatic way of saying junk, a junk bond. Okay? Now, a little background here. These rating services try to present themselves as very respectable and all of that, but I saw them back in the day, in the 90s, and I knew very well back then they were really shady. And that shadiness kind of came to a big, fat head in the crisis of 2008, when some of these bonds that these rating services, especially Standard & Poor's, were giving AAAs to, they went tap city, down the rabbit hole, into the sewer system and out with the rest of the turds into no cash flow heaven. Okay? And I mean, Standard & Poor's was the worst of them. Ratings that were just ridiculously high on highly speculative instruments. The government, interestingly enough, cracked down and fined Standard & Poor's, because they were the most egregious, just nailed them to the wall with massive, massive fines. So you know what Standard & Poor's did? Standard & Poor's downgraded the rating on government bonds to punish the government for smacking its ass. I mean, that takes guts. I mean, that takes testicles. You know, you get smacked by the U.S. government for being bad, so what do? You downgrade government bonds. Well, we're not sure those will ever pay. Oh, yes, they will. Quit it. Now, let me tell you my own personal stories about the background. And I was not working with Standard & Poor's. I was working with one of the other two, and I won't tell you which one it was. But back in the 90s, I was getting companies up, getting them public, getting them listed. I mean, trying to do all the good, right stuff, getting their financials in order. And I thought, okay, big step with these companies is to get ratings for their debt. And so I contacted one of these services, and very nice, right up front, they said, well, okay, well, we understand we're going to be working with highly speculative and non-investment grade companies, and we'll have you be filling out all of this information, and we'll give you a chart of our fee chart. And I thought, fee chart. Well, it was interesting because I didn't quite understand what I was seeing when I got the facts of it. But it started at like, $20,000. And it went up from there into close to $1 million for their rating service. And I kept trying to get my mind around what was different about different fees that you paid. So I finally talked to a heavy duty guy. I didn't bother him too often, but he was always there for me when I needed him out in California. And he said, oh, don't you understand? The more you pay, the better your rating is going to be. I said, wait, what? Yeah. He said, you pay that fee, what are they asking now? And I said, well, it looks like $800,000 is a top-notch fee. He said, gee, silly, back in my time, it was like $500,000. Well, that'll get you a better rating. Not a hugely better rating, but it will give them more interest in helping you get a good rating. Really? Yeah. Okay. So in other words, it was a pay-to-play kind of deal. This was in the 90s. I can't say what happened after that, but there was a pay-to-play. And so I took that back and I to the corporate directors of this first company I did this for, and they were with me. They said, "To hell with this. We're not going to get a rating. I mean, we don't have the money for that. And even if we did, this is so phony, it's ridiculous." So there you are. Take those ratings with a grain of salt. Do your own research. Fundamental analysis is every bit as good as some rating service is going to be for a bond issue. Now, moving on. Not a lot to say. Just going to show you something. Look, the company is going to try to issue the bond with a coupon that is commensurate with the level of risk of the debt instrument. So the company is going to, and the brokers are going to be a part of, the investment bankers are going to be a part of this too. They're going to be doing some of the best financial analysis you can imagine. Some of it is what I'm showing you here to figure out what the right coupon will be at the time of issue. 5.7, 5.8, 5.9, it matters a whole lot. Let me show you why it matters. Remember, I am the company and I am going to issue $1 billion in bonds. And I really, really want to get $1 billion in bonds. Well, $1 billion. Obviously, I'm going to have to pay you greedy son of a dog, a lot of money. The syndicate's going to take their cut, okay? But taking that aside, I am really excited about getting that $1 billion, you know? So let's take the calculator, and I'm going to show you how to do a bond. It's actually ridiculously easy. Okay, we're going to do this. We're going to assume that the coupons are annual. We can do semi-annual in a little while, but let's assume the coupons are annual. Now, let's assume that the analysts in the back room get it dead on. The market yield wants 5.8%. The market wants 5%, and we say the coupon should be 5.8%. Now, see this 5.8% right there? See that? That's $58. Don't leave that as a percentage. Turn it into the cash money that the lenders are going to get. That way you will not confuse it with this thing right here. This is a percentage that goes in the calculator in the I over Y. That's a percentage that goes in the calculator in the I over Y. So now, watch. The N. This is a 20-year issue. So, well, let's do a reset here first. Reset. Okay, so now this is a 20-year issue. So N is going to be 20. Now the I over Y, that's the yield. The market wants 5.8%. So I'm going to put in a 5.8%. Well, I would have liked to have put in 5.8%. I over Y, enter. Now, the payments are going to be that coupon of $58. That's why you turn that into a dollar amount. The coupon, we state it as a percent of par, but for calculation, you need to turn it back into a payment. $58. Payment. One last thing you have to remember is that this bond pays off at the end. It pays $1,000. $1,000 at the end. That is the future value, the face value. Don't ever forget with a bond, you have to put in the face value. Now, let's see what the price of this bond is. Compute the price value. Well, spank me Jesus, it's $1,000. This bond sells at par. Any bond where the market and the coupon are identical will create a bond that sells at par of $1,000. The bond's at par. Now let's say that the market, we screwed it up. The market wanted a yield on the bond of 5.7%. But we priced on a 5.8% coupon. So in other words, the market didn't want 5.8%. It wanted only 5.7%. So now let's go back and say, okay, instead of 5.8%, let's put 5.7% in there for the I over Y. And now let's compute the price value again. Ow! $1,011.75. This bond sells at a premium to par. Because investors are going to say, we wanted only 5.7%. This coupon is better than what we were hoping for. So we are going to flow toward that bond. We're going to buy it because it is a good deal. And that's going to elevate the price up to something above par. In this case, $1,011.75. In this case, it was $1,000. Now let's say we screwed up the other way. The market wanted a yield of 5.9%, but we screwed up and priced for a coupon and put in a coupon of 5.8%. So in other words, the market wanted more than what we're going to deliver to it. So if we put in 5.9% for the interest and compute the price value. Ouch. This bond sells at a discount to par. At a discount to par. This bond sells at a discount. $988.44. This bond sells at a discount to par. Here's the deal. Okay. Well, something I've got to bring up here. Bonds, if you see bond, interestingly, it's hard to find bond quotes online anymore. It's just, I don't know what has happened. Used to be you could go to almost lots of sites and see the quotes on bonds. I don't know what's going on with that. But anyway, bond quotes are always at a tenth of the price. So you're not going to see $988.44. What you're going to see is $98.84. And it's not going to have a dollar sign because it's not a dollar value. It's a quote. So the quote, if I say quote, you give me $98.84. That's the quote. No dollar sign. It's not a dollar value. On this one, you were quoting, that'd be $101.18 on the quote. Don't put a dollar sign because it's not a dollar value, but that's how we quote them. Historically, it was because they did it at a tenth because they used to print them in newspapers in the broadsheets, and the columns were really thin. They had to put in so many different issues and all that, so they put it at a tenth. My favorite story of this one is a fellow that he fancied himself a great investor. He was one of the early day traders in the 80s. He was constantly finding out. He kept making fun of people who had formal education. I can do this. I never had a bit of education about it. And he was always getting himself in trouble with things like futures and stuff like that. Well, the dumb idiot, once he saw these quotes in the Wall Street Journal, and he saw quotes for like bonds quotes that were like 97.60. And he ordered a bunch of them. And when he saw the bill, he almost had a heart attack. He was threatening to call the police, sue the brokerage house for lying to him, sue the Wall Street Journal for misprinting quotes. And what are you supposed to say? Frank, you dumb ox. They were quotes. They were not the dollar values, but it's not that uncommon. The stories of people who thought a quote was a price, and it ain't a price at all. It's a quote. So I caution you, sometimes you'll hear me slip back into the quote mentality. And that's something that I got to still do. I got to fix something on that special topics quiz that I gave you guys. Because I gave you a quote and you didn't know what I was doing on that. So I got to give you all credit for that question on the special topics quiz. You remember that? Where I gave you the quote on it? It's just so natural for me to do it. I didn't even think. So I got to give you all credit for that little bonehead move I did there. But anyway, wow. Okay.
What did I figure out?
This is the technical. But let me bring something up real quick here. Like I said, in real life, in real world trading of securities, most bonds pay semi-annually. They don't pay on an annual basis. So that wouldn't be $58. That would be 26, but the number of periods would be 40. Okay? So that changes things a little bit. Let me show you what it would do here. Oh, no, let me do something. Okay. DLR ...8.4%, 2046, okay? Now, if we treat this, and let's say that the market yield right now is 8.3%. So, in other words, this bond is going to sell at a slight premium to par. I want to make sure you see that. It's a premium because this coupon is a little more generous than what the market wants. Market said, 8.3. But because the coupon is a little nudge above 8.3, investors are going to be attracted to this because its risk level is 8.3, not 8.4. So anyway, let me do this one just with annual payments, and then let me do it with semi-annual payments. So in the first instance, what would happen is I would have a 30-year issue. I would have, obviously, the I over Y is going to be 8.3. The payments are $84 a year. And always, don't ever forget to put in that face value. That's that kicker at the end. It's part of the cash flow value stream. And then I'm going to compute the price value. And as we suspected, it's running at 101.9 right now, 101.09, or $1,010.95. It's a little, with annual coupon payments, it's a little... $1,010.95. Okay, now watch what happens when I do semi-annual. It doesn't change it a lot, but it does change it a little. So instead, what will happen is, instead of 30 years, I'll have 60 periods because I'll get 60 checks, not 30. I'll get 60 because there'll be two every year. And then I'm going to cut the payments in half. Each one of those payments won't be 84. It will be 42. Now let's compute the present value. My ass. Let's try that again. 60. How did that happen? 60? Oh, dead. Yes, I'm just testing your ass to see if you're watching. 8.3 divided by 2. You also have to divide the interest rate by 2. Wow. Okay. Anyway, and then we got $42 payments. Now compute the price value. Actually, 111 rounded, that's 101100. just a little bit higher price because you're getting your cash flow just a little bit more regularly. So there's just a little nudge in it. This could actually matter if you're talking about millions of dollars, those little nudges. And like I said, some companies are paying like quarterly and monthly. It's happening with some. But now, let's turn the problem around and look at it from a realistic perspective. When we look at the newspapers, when we look at the online resources, we know the price. We see the price that the market is charging for a debt issue. TJZ, and let's do one here, 6.5%, 2,000, and this is secondary, this is out there already, 2,028. And the quote right now, well, I'll just write it as a price, is 985.22 is the price. This is what you'd really see on a ticker stream. You'd see the price. So now we have to, the job here is not to find the price. We know the price. I mean, markets tell us a price. What we want to know is, what is the market saying the yield is? If we look at this, this guy is selling at a slight discount to par, which means that we know right off the bat that the market thinks the 6.5% isn't enough. The market is giving a little bit of a spank on this bond, which tells me that the coupon of 6.5% isn't quite enough. Now, let me do this as an annual one to begin with. And it's just the backwards sort of what we did before. 2028, assuming that it's exactly on the years, that means that the term of this bond is 12 years. 12 years, and the price value of the bond is 985.22, and don't forget to make it a negative. Price PVs always go in as negatives. For heaven's sakes, if you get an NAN or something like that, error or something like that, that means that you did it. You didn't put it as a negative. Payment, $65 a year. Face value, $1,000. Now we compute the yield. It's a 6.68% yield. As I had suspected, the yield is above the coupon, 6.68%. You follow it? Yeah, it's like 18 basis points. No, I'm sorry, 13 basis points. The market is saying, 13 basis points more is what we really wanted, so we're going to shave that much. The price is going to fall. Investors will sell until the price settles at a place where that yield is obtained. Okay? Now, notice what's going to happen when interest rates start to go up, as they will eventually when the Fed gets scared about inflation. Interest rates in general in the economy are going to start to go up. In other words, the market yields are going to start to pull upward. So what that's going to cause to happen with bond prices of bonds that are already out there in the market with these coupons, bond prices are going to start to go downward. Now, we're in a very low interest rate environment. So you're seeing coupons on bonds at very low levels historically, which means that when the Fed starts to crank up interest rates and the economy and the market starts to reflect that in yields, pushing yields up, All these bonds that are sitting out there with these low coupons, they're going to go down pretty darn seriously. Those bond prices are going to start sliding rapidly. And that's why the one reason the Fed is, of course, tries to start talking a little bit tough about interest rates and all that, and then they get scared because the market is just waiting with the jitters for the Fed to say time to start raising interest rates, because the market is just going to start dropping prices, especially on bonds. Interest rate sensitive bonds especially those prices are just going to drop very hard. So that's why if you are an investor in bonds, you shouldn't be in the market for the price. You should be in there just for that money that's going to be flowing. But notice that 6.5% coupon, when interest rates start to go up, you as a lender to a corporation are not going to be happy because all you're getting is 6.5% a year when you could buy a new bond at a higher coupon. So you're probably going to sell off these bonds, which will cause the prices to fall, to buy bonds with better coupons, with higher coupons. It all works in kind of a lockstep fashion here. Now, One quick thing, interestingly enough, is if I watch what happens if I do this one semi-annually. Let me make sure you know what to do. Okay, so the term of the bond is 12 years, so that would be semi-annual, 24 months. And the payments would not be $65. It would be 65 divided by $2. The price would still be the same. Now, let's compute the I over Y. Now, don't forget, if you're doing semi-annual, your I over Y is going to be half of what you want. So you have to times the I over Y by 2. Well, that's suck.com. 3.34 times 2. I thought you could do that. Really? It actually is almost not different here. It's hardly different at all. 3.3405. Yeah, it's for a bond in that close. Now, let me point out something. And this is a great question. A great question for an in-class exam. Hint, hint. Nudge, nudge. Wink, wink. Not that I would ask a question like this. Something interesting happens. Notice that there's a spread. The spread between yield and coupon drives the price. You see that? The spread between the coupon and the yield drives the price. You notice that spread, if the yield goes higher and higher, the price, again, relative to the coupon, then the price goes farther below par. Notice as the opposite, if the yield gets farther and farther below the coupon, the bond's price would go higher in premium to par. The spread between the yield and the price, I'm sorry, the spread between the yield and the coupon drives the spread between par and the price. The spread between the yield and the coupon drives the spread between par and price. As the yield goes farther above the coupon, the bond's price goes farther below par. Again, as the bond's yield goes farther above the coupon, the bond's price goes farther below par. On the other hand, as the yield goes farther below the coupon, the bond's price goes farther above par. Again, as the bond's yield goes farther below the coupon, the bond's price goes farther above par. You remember that. If you have to, get it tattooed on your ass. There's a tat parlor down there that specializes. He's real good with finance stuff. This is one of those things, it's kind of like, it's not instantly evident. But as a market, if the market wants the yield to go higher, the coupon is, the company can't do anything. I can't do anything about the coupon. It's already out there. So I'm just sitting there, and what's going to happen is as the market yields go up, my coupon is flat fixed, so that's going to just cause this price to go farther into a discount to par. On the other hand, in an environment where interest rates are falling against the coupon, the bond's price is going to sell at more and more of a premium to par. Interestingly, there was a time back in the earlier 2000s when coupons were, in the 8, 9%, 7% range. And then after the crisis, when the Fed dropped interest rates through the floor, these bonds that had been issued in the early years of the 21st century, they were selling at hellacious premiums to par because they had such good coupons on them. In an environment where new issue bonds had coupons like 3, 4%, these bonds that had coupons like 8, 9%, I mean, investors were just buying those like there was no tomorrow. And so the prices were selling at great premiums to par. But I want you to notice something interesting. When a bond hits maturity, one of two things will happen. Are you familiar with Schrodinger's cat? You've never heard of the Schrodinger's cat experiment? You're nodding. You see, there's this experiment, it's a physics experiment, and it has to do with uncertainty. You put a cat in a box. Okay, got a box. And you put the cat in there. And you close the box. And then you put in a radioactive substance. There's a 50-50 chance that the radioactive substance is going to release a lethal particle in the next 24 hours. So you've got the box closed. And the cat's in there. And the cat gets really quiet. Now, over that 24-hour period, is the cat alive or dead? That's the fundamental paradox of our world. We don't know. The cat does not have a living or dead state until we open the box. If we open the box and we see a dead cat, well, the cat's dead. If we open the box and the cat jumps out and claws our face for leaving him in there for a whole day, then we got a live cat. Okay? So, what the hell does this have to do with finance? This. When a bond reaches maturity, one of two things will happen. Either it will pay, the cat is alive, or it will not pay, the cat is dead. It's as simple as that. Now, on the maturity date, sir, if the company is alive, what are you as the investor, the lender, going to get on the maturity date? If the company is fine, what are you going to get? $1,000. You open the box and a $1,000 cat comes out. However, if the company is dead, what are you going to get on the maturity date?
Zero.
Yes, you're going to get, oh, well, actually, I hope no one jumped. You might get something if the company had some liquid assets left over that they could get. But for, let's say it's just zero, okay? So here, okay, puss, the puss is dead. You know, how much is a dead cat worth? Zero. I mean, what are you going to do with it?
Taxidermy.
Yes, you could. I suppose, and then put it on your car hood, or I don't know. Okay, that's the thing, though. So in other words, it doesn't, as you're approaching the maturity date, your bond, I mean, 2 days before. Okay, I want you to listen to that box, madam. Okay? you listen real close, it's like 2 hours before. You listen an hour before, real close. Okay. You listen 10 minutes before. You listen 1 minute before. Okay, things got weird in the box. It was radioactive and it genetically altered the cat. You know, you got a cow cat. Okay. You open up the... Okay, as you are approaching... Shut up. As you are approaching the time, you're going to know whether the cat's dead or not, okay? You're going to know whether the company's going to be alive or dead, okay? So let's say that you know the company's going to be alive the day before, 10 minutes before. You could have a yield spread from hell, 1,000 basis points. You could have any kind of yield spread. As you approach the maturity date, as the term approaches zero, all bonds are going to approach either par or zero. That's just that's what this was all about. You see, because if I buy a bond 10 minutes before it matures, in 10 minutes I'm going to get $1,000 or I'm going to get nothing. If I'm going to get nothing, I probably would have paid nothing for it. But, so realistically, 10 minutes before a bond matures, it's going to be worth $1,000. You're going to pay $1,000 because in 10 minutes you're going to get $1,000. Even 2 days before, you're going to know if the bond's going to pay or not. And so it wouldn't matter if the coupon was 6.5% and the yield was 50 million percent. Realistically, you're going to get $1,000. So essentially what that means is that as the time to maturity, as the term approaches zero, as the term approaches zero, it doesn't matter how far the coupon and the yield are from each other. It's either going to come at par from above, or it's going to come at par from below, depending on whether the yield and the coupon, which way the yield and the coupon spread is configured. So in other words, if the coupon was above the yield, it would dive down on par from above. It's selling at a premium to par because the coupon is better than the yield. But as you approach the maturity date, I mean, it's going to pay $1,000 one way or the other. But if it's selling at a discount to par, I mean, sure, it's going to sell at a discount to par because the yield is higher than the coupon. The coupon isn't paying enough. But, I mean, as you get close, 10 minutes before, it's still going to pay you $1,000 in 10 minutes. So the bond's going to approach $1,000. Or it's going to approach zero if the bond is in a company that's dead. But I want you to keep those concepts absolutely locked in your mind, because I do ask this kind of thing on that first exam. This is that real heavy critical thinking that if you get it right, and I see that you got it right, I'm going to tell you a secret about grading, okay? You're either going to miss or hit when you write essay answers for me, because you've got two sentences to get it right. And you have to say it right very quickly. I'm reading some semesters 600 papers, and all those answers on those. So if I see that you understand the concept on both ways, I'm going to scan that and say perfect and go on. But if I see that there is an error and you're not thinking and there's muddiness, there's muddling in it, or you're writing a lot, I know that you don't understand the concept, and then I'm going to get bitchy, drink some Jack Daniels, and read it thoroughly to see how many points I can take off. That's the way it works. So if you make me happy, and yes, I do live Twitter my grading, so I comment as I'm going along. Really? Was that an answer? My God. And things like that. And I also post pictures of my cats helping me grade your papers, okay? So that's a caution to you. Phineas, my cat Phineas, is a very harsh grader. He also, one more warning, let me warn you about this. On Tuesday of next week, we review, and then on Thursday we have the test. You, if you got your major act together, that test won't take you more than probably about 35, 40 minutes to write your answers. If you don't know what you're doing, my God, you're going to be here until the cows come home. But if you're writing those answers, if you're looking on Tuesday, I'm going to go through possible questions with you. 10 or 15. You're going to be given 5 questions, answer 4 of them. 2 sentences or less, perfect grammar. Don't text me, for God's sake. Don't ever put text. Don't ever lol me, LOL. But anyway, okay, now, when you're writing your, I'm going to give you some questions, possible questions that could be on it. Okay, don't run to Wikistupedia or Investostupedia for your answers. I know those sources, they are written by crackheads. So don't go there and think you've got a perfect answer, because I will nail you to a cross if you do that. Those people who write for Wikipedia are a bunch of idiots. Some of them are some of the most disturbed human beings you'll ever want to meet in your life. That's right. Think about it. You've got people who spend their lives filling in information to answer the questions of the universe. They don't do anything else. They don't even go to the toilet. What kind of people write those kinds of, in finance? They are totally, I mean, some of their stuff is crazy. Investopedia is bad too, because it's way too simplistic and it's talking to you like you're dumb. You have no knowledge. And unfortunately, at this level, you're above that enough that I would know that you're writing something that came from Finance for Dummies. Okay, so the best source, what is the best source for answers to questions on my exam? What's the best source? No. My lectures, that's right. The podcasts. Remember what I said, if the book and I disagree? Who's right? Bingo, you're learning very well. Also, there's nothing in that test that is in the book, but not my lectures. It's all from my lectures, my tests are. Everything is from my lectures in those tests. Some of them are lowball. Just give me a definition. Just say it. Just write it out in a nice, perfect sentence, and then go from there. Some of them require like this. This is more of a critical, deep thinking kind of question where you have to really understand it to be able to write it succinctly in 2 sentences. Does that help you a little bit to get you really scared about the exam? Good. Here's the deal. On your first exam, you might as well check your score at youSuck.com, okay? Because it's going to be a bad score. It's going to be not horrible, but it's going to be, you're going to do better. That's why the first exam is 5%, the second is 10%, and the final is 15%. Because on the first exam, usually your average is about 72%. Second exam, 78%. Final exam, 84%. Historically, that's how it works, because you learn how to answer the questions. And so that's why it's going to be hard for you on the first exam. You're going to be mad at me because I took points off when you did bad grammar. I took points off if you said too much. You'll get over it. You'll go on. You can go on Oprah Winfrey and tell what a horrible experience you had with me later in your life. Okay? I think that's all I have for you today. I thank you.